There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
I think it's time to let go.
Welcome into College Football Live. Mike Golic Jr., Greg McElroy, Chris Budden with you for the next 30 minutes. And we got a lot of topics to get to. But gentlemen, sit tight because we got some more important names to get up onto our screen. That is because Holly Rowe and Maria Taylor are on day 6 of their Taylor road trip. 7 schools in 7 days. And day 6 takes them to Tuscaloosa. And ladies, I can only imagine there's been a little sleep. A lot of work, a little sleep, but you look fantastic. What have you learned so far today about the Tide?
Thanks, Chris. It's funny because Holly just said, yeah, we're perky, we're here. And I'm like, we're alive, which is really the key to this thing. We're going 7-on-7. We still have one more stop, which is Ohio State. But it's great to be in Tuscaloosa because we're calling it the fourth quarter, and one of their major themes is pushing through that fourth quarter with the competitiveness, right? Toughness. And we saw Henry Ruggs a little bit earlier, and he had the fourth quarters on his shirt. So we're drawing in a little bit of that energy here in Tuscaloosa and talking to some of the players that are going to make an impact this season.
That's right. And what everyone wants to know is how will they rebound from last year's loss in the national championship game? And the players we talked to said they're going to do it through discipline. They want to have discipline on the details to get back to where they were. And the most important player who is talking about that is, of course, Tua Tagovailoa.
All right, since we're in Alabama, we finally run into Tua Tagovailoa. And since we're at his home and we know he can play football, we decided to challenge him to a different game. Pool, are you up for it?
I'm up for it.
Okay, Tua, you talked about the leadership team. I'm curious, what is something small that is important to the leadership team that makes a difference? You mentioned, like, transferring something in the locker room onto the field. You know what I mean? Give us an example.
Like, if an offensive guy and a defensive guy get together, I mean, they can see eye to eye. So going out there, it wouldn't be as big of a deal, you know, if they get into a little scuffle, because the next play, they'd understand.
Speaking of like helping and correcting, let's talk about what you're correcting in your game, or what are you trying to do to help this team moving forward?
Well, what I'm trying to help my team with this year is just being the best leader that I can be and being the best version of myself, you know, going out there to the practice field, whether it's in encouraging someone, you know. The weather's hot today, so you know, a lot of the guys are not gonna want to practice today. And so, I mean, just being that person that you got to go out there and have the right mindset. Everybody can look at and be like, I want what that guy has. And so, kind of leading by example.
So you think about how different it is this time of year compared to last year. Tua Tagovailoa is the man for Alabama football. No more questions about who he's going to be splitting time with or is he going to be the starter. And so he's now on the Unity Council. He's one of the leaders of this team, and he's finally able to assert his voice and be the leader that he thinks he can be. And I think that's important.
Yeah, especially because he has a wide receiver group that obviously has proven that they're going to be one of the tops in the nation. And we spent some time with Henry Ruggs III as we stood in front of Jerry Judy's Biletnikoff Award from a season ago. And he talked about the competitive nature that entire room has, that they even have blinking competitions. I mean, all the way down to taking it to the field. So I think that competitive edge, along with the talented skill set they have, is going to pay huge dividends for that Alabama offense this season. And you heard Tua saying that guys are going to be tired. They're not going to want to practice because it's really hot. We're going to go out there and look at practice. We don't care that it's hot. We're going with the right mindset. That's what we're going to do.
Fourth quarter, championship mindset.
Fourth quarter, one more day. Thank you, ladies. So Holly and Maria will wrap up their 7 schools in 7 days tomorrow when they visit Ohio State. So, guys, Alabama begins the season on August 31st against Duke. The Football Power Index gives them a 21% chance to win the entire season. That seems really small, but that's actually fourth highest in all of college football. So as you guys start looking at Alabama's schedule, Greg, where's the pothole?
The toughest matchup is against Auburn, and it's in Jordan-Hare on the Plains. Obviously, rivalry game, and they're really the one team in the SEC West that has consistently been up to the task of playing well against Alabama, especially in recent years. Remember, they won a couple years ago and beat the Tide, who were undefeated at the time. So I look at this Auburn team and the way they're constructed. They're poised to make things really difficult on opposing offenses. They're great along the front defensively. They bring everybody back on the offensive line. They have great skill weapons. The one question that they have is at the quarterback position, where they're trying to figure out, is it going to be Gatewood or is it going to be Nix? So by that point, week 12, I would think the quarterback position will be solidified. So I expect Auburn to be a very tough test for Alabama in week 12 of the regular season.
Greg, I'm glad that's why you said quarterback, because that's exactly where I want to go. Week 3 on the road against South Carolina. Jake Bentley, a veteran starter in this league. We know the coach's son moniker only gets you so far, but now at this point, what has consistently beat Alabama? Dynamic quarterbacks that can make plays, and while Jake Bentley might not be the most dynamic ground threat, he leads a team that returns 14 starters. We know with Coach Muschamp on that defense what they're going to have consistently, and if they can stay healthy on that side of the ball, they have a brutal schedule this year, but they are a team primed to be the thorn in the side for a lot of big-time programs, and Alabama could be one of them.
Hey, I agree with you, Golic, because looking at Auburn, so Gus Malzahn had their scrimmage on Thursday, and he came away from it having no idea what to do about his quarterbacks. And he usually says after that first scrimmage, he knows who he's going to get. So a couple of freshmen up for that job. But when we look at the rest of the country, Alabama, obviously the favorite to win their division, but there's several other divisions that are kind of up in the air. So, Golic, let's start with you. Who is the most wide-open division right now?
I'm going to go with the ACC Coastal. I feel like every year it's sort of a round robin to see who gets to face Clemson coming out of the other side. And when you look at everything that's going on in there right now, Miami starting a new, in air quotes, regime with Manny Diaz assuming that head role now, bringing over Dan Enos and a new quarterback group there trying to capture it. Virginia Tech and that staunch defense. Bud Foster obviously going into his last season as D coordinator with 10 starters coming back on a group that's always tough and blast. Pitt was picked to finish fifth last year and ends up representing this side of the division. So you never seem to know, and that's without Bryce Perkins of Virginia, all the talent and uncertainty on this side of the conference.
That's a great choice. I have to go with the Big Ten West because, much like the Coastal, I honestly think six teams can win it. The one team that I would say I'm not so sure about is Illinois, and they're going to be better. So I think Minnesota is a team that has a chance to be a lot better if they can even out the playing field. I think Nebraska is going to make tremendous strides in Scott Frost's second year. You have to like what Wisconsin's built as a program over the last decade. And the team that I kind of like going into the season, the Iowa Hawkeyes. They're physical. They have a veteran quarterback in Nate Stanley. Replacing two first-round caliber tight ends is not ideal. Fant and Hockenson made this offense really dynamic, but you know they're going to be committed to the run game. They have a defensive difference maker in A.J. Epinesa, and the schedule, it's not exactly easy, but somewhat manageable. So I like Iowa quite a bit, just knowing that every couple years, man, you sleep on the Hawkeyes, they will have a tendency to sneak up on you. So I like Iowa heading into the season, but the Big Ten West race is wide open.
I just enjoyed replacing two first-round tight ends as not ideal. Greg, you know how to make everyone feel good going into the season, brother.
I just love that we have some things to look forward to, because for as much as everyone talks about Alabama and Clemson, there are some divisions that are just completely wide open and a lot of really good matchups. And you mentioned Scott Frost and the possibility of Nebraska in that division. Well, Scott Frost making his second year at Nebraska. We've seen a lot of coaches make surge recently in that second year. Coming up, we'll take a look at some other second-year coaches and who we expect to have some big years. Also coming up on Monday on ESPN at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, we'll kick off our fourth annual fantasy football marathon with 28 straight hours of coverage. All the fantasy insight to get you ready for your season. Coverage will also be on ESPN2 and, as always, streaming live on the ESPN app. Welcome back to College Football Live. Last year, we saw a lot of coaches in their second seasons bring their teams back to national prominence. You look at Tom Herman at Texas, brought the Longhorns to a first 10-win season in a decade. Also, LSU's Ed Orgeron, they reached the 10-win mark and ranked number 6 in the country by the end of the season. And up on ESPN.com today, there's an article about second-year coaches, why they have so much success after the first year. So we got to thinking, we look around the league. Golic, let's start with you. Of all the coaches in their second year, who do you think is going to have the breakout season?
I look at Mario Cristobal and this Oregon team. It's amazing. When I saw this article, I realized, oh my God, this is only year number two for a coach that if you put him in the octagon with every other coach in college football, he's the one coming out alive. I think when you just look at this team and the way it's made up, you bring back maybe the best offensive line in college football, a quarterback in Justin Herbert who has a chance to be the number one overall pick, and a wealth of talent on both sides of the ball. They're poised for a breakout season, and quite frankly, the Pac-12 needs this desperately.
They need a really good performance week one, or else that breakout is going to be no, no, no. I look at Scott Frost and what he's building at Nebraska. Now, they relied on a lot of youth last year, and that youth, one of the biggest leaps that you make as a player is between year one and year two. And within the program, knowing that it kind of was a bit of a philosophical change from where they were before he got there to where they are now, you would think that that offense is really going to roll. Second half of the season last year, they averaged almost 40 points a game. So you have to assume that type of production offensively is likely to continue. You identify a couple key playmakers on the defensive side, then you're in a great spot. But I look at this schedule, too, and it's somewhat favorable for a team in the Big Ten West. So I like Nebraska to be around that 8 or 9 win plateau, potentially, maybe doubling their win total from a year ago.
So from a sophomore surge to a sophomore slump, Greg, who's got the most pressure to win in their second season?
I'm going to go Willie Taggart, and he inherited the tough spot. It felt like the team and the coaches weren't really on the same page last year. I did their game against Florida, and there were times at the end of the season when you'd look, and there's only 10 guys out of there on offense. They're running a receiver in late. They're having post-snap penalties. They're having post-snap flags because guys are doing things kind of on their own terms. So I think he has to really come out of the gate strong. Boise State week one's a tough matchup for sure. But if they can win that one, generate some momentum, there's still a lot of talent on that roster. So I'm actually expecting Willie Taggart to have a nice season, but he certainly needs it, Mike.
He really does. And it's not just losing and having a down year, but it's getting embarrassed at certain turns last year. And that's just the thing that Florida State as a school and a fan base can't really reconcile with, coming off of everything, the burden of expectation coming off of everything they accomplished during the Jimbo Fisher era, and having to go watch him start to already lay the foundation for a rock solid program at Texas A&M has to be a tough bit to stomach. And for Willie Taggart, who did his bit of moving around before he finally landed on Florida State, there is that whiff of, all right, you're here now. We need to see some commitment and production to justify all this hype.
Well, someone else that also had a 5-7 season was the Tennessee Volunteers. And I'm surprised the name Jeremy Pruitt didn't come up with the expectations on Rocky Top. Greg, you follow the SEC a ton. Should he have the same expectations and weight as his shoulders?
No, because the program that he inherited was a mess. And they had won games, but they haven't really been really relevant nationally in a decade and a half. I mean, early 2000s, whereas Florida State, they won a national championship in 2013. So I think Rocky Top fans are looking at the Tennessee program as a long build. They showed some progress in year one, too. I mean, they upset Auburn, did some nice things. So he has a much longer leash, I think, when it comes to making a couple mistakes. Even if they go 6-6, 5-7, 7-5 this year, they're still going to be a very patient fan base relative to what expectations will be for Florida State moving forward.
Interesting. Patient fan base in Rocky Top, Greg has called it. Well, we all know that a lot of the success is based on the coordinators that you hire. So a lot of new coordinators around the country. Golic, what coordinator will make the biggest impact this college football season?
I think it's got to be Dan Enos at Miami. You look at the job he did with the quarterbacks at Alabama and what he was a part of the last couple of years. And this Miami offense that last time we saw them, and I got a chance to call their bowl game against Wisconsin in the Pinstripe Bowl, mustered up all of 48 passing yards and 4 interceptions. It was an embarrassing performance for this program that had to stare at a defense on the other side of the ball led by their now head coach Manny Diaz that led the nation in tackles for loss and was dynamic. And so I think Enos coming over here is going to find ways to help scheme guys open, bring some life into this offense that just got too stagnant last year.
I'm going to go with a guy in kind of a similar situation, Josh Gattis at Michigan. He's now been charged with kind of transforming this Michigan offense into yesterday's offense, the old pro-style, multiple system that we saw Jim Harbaugh run in the NFL and at Stanford. Now they're going to go more spread. And Shea Patterson is kind of built as a player at the quarterback spot to run an offense like this. Now, they did implement some zone read, some RPO things last year. But that now that's going to go from a wrinkle in the playbook to the priority in the playbook. So he's been charged with kind of reinventing this Michigan offense. So expect that group to look quite different than they did a year ago.
I think after that, I would look over at Oklahoma. We've gone so much on offense for this that a place like Oklahoma that has enjoyed the benefit of Lincoln Riley for so long now, back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners, now is getting a bit of a different guy in Jalen Hurts. And so you're not sure if you can expect the same production. And so on the other side, Alex Grinch has to take a group that was 114th in total defense, 126th in red zone defense. Keep in mind, there are only 129 Division I teams at this level. And so if you can take them, Kenneth Murray's a great piece of linebacker in the middle of this defense, and cause some of that chaos that Ohio State fans got used to seeing, and bring a little bit of that. If they're just average in Oklahoma in Norman this season, they can do so much to help out their offense with Texas nipping at their heels.
It's not easy being a defensive coordinator with an air raid system, but Grinch has done it before. He was with Mike Leach at Washington State, so he knows how to scheme with an offense that is that potent. I'm going to stay on offense, though, because I like the idea of transformation. And USC is also going through a transformation. They are going from that pro-style multiple system to an air raid system by bringing in Graham Harrell. And Graham Harrell is a guy that played in this system, knows it like the back of his hand, and is going to have some pieces to work with. SC, maybe not as talented as they were, say, 10, 15 years ago, but there's still enough there to win a lot of football games in a Pac-12 South where you can really kind of maneuver up and down according to how you perform on a weekly basis. So I'm going to go with Graham Harrell as another coordinator to keep an eye on as we head into the 19 season.
I love the Graham Harrell hire. He's extremely intelligent. If you ever spend any time around him, he has so much energy that the players will love. But here's what I'm wondering. Will they have to recruit to a system, Golic, or do they already have the pieces there to be successful in first year under Harrell?
I think they've got exactly what they need on that offense right now. When you look at guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown and all the talent at the wide receiver position, saw it firsthand. They were playing a Notre Dame team with everything to lose towards the end of last season, one that should have beaten them handily. And instead, you looked at JT Daniels slinging the ball over the yard, and you wondered, where had this offense been the rest of the season? And I think now with Graham Harrell leaning on all the experience and talent they have at that wide receiver position is going to put JT Daniels in the absolute best position to succeed.
Well, certainly will be fun to see out in Los Angeles. Meanwhile, what does Mike Tyson have to do with college football? Interesting. Well, let's just sit on that for a moment. We'll have that coming up next. Also, defending national champion Clemson Tigers kick off their season against Georgia Tech Thursday, August 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern in Death Valley, only on ACC Network. Get ACCN.com to check providers in your area. If you don't see your provider listed, contact them to demand they carry ACC Network. Oh, can't sell me now. Welcome back. Mike Tyson was in Tuscaloosa yesterday. Saban invited him to speak to the team. His message was about how not to follow in his footsteps and not to believe in your own fame. He did get to spend some time with Saban. They discussed his style.
I guess you have to be a champion before you can ever win a championship, which means you have to do everything that you need to do so that you can be.
It's lifestyle. It's your lifestyle. How you with my particular. I was 12 years old. I was champion at 13 years old because my lifestyle was champion. I went to bed every night. I trained every night. I walked every morning. Everything I did was consistent with my boxing and being the best.
God, can you imagine being a fly on the wall in that room, like listening to two of the greatest in their sports? Which got me to thinking, I'm going to make you guys head coaches for a day. You don't get the million-dollar salaries, but you get to invite one guest speaker in to coach your team. Greg, we'll start with you. Who would you pick?
I think about the guy that might have the biggest impact on me personally would be Tiger Woods. I would love for Tiger Woods to come. Now, we'd need a pretty big budget to be able to fly him in and to get him to spend a night with us. But a guy that's experienced the highest of the highs, been the best in the world, and has also been brought down with injury and has bounced back now in winning the Masters, his 15th major and his 80th golf championship on the PGA Tour. So Tiger Woods would be the guy that would come to mind for me, and I'd love to hear from and help me get some perspective.
Yeah, Greg, I'm glad you went with someone serious and a very worthwhile lecture, because I'm going completely off the grid here. Give me Kit Harington as Jon Snow from Game of Thrones. That guy, you always know in Greg in sports, you don't need a C on your chest to know who the captain is. In every room Jon Snow walked into, he was elected captain against his will most of the times. Leadership ability off the charts, going to charge headstrong into every contest. Give me that guy in front of the team. Let's rally the troops.
Yeah, but he bent the knee to Daenerys, so is he really the captain? I mean, last time I checked, come on, Golic, get your Game of Thrones history on, because you know that, yeah, he was a captain of the people up north, the wildlings, he was a captain of Winterfell, but as soon as he met Daenerys, he bent the knee. So is he really the captain? Come on.
I would like to apologize for the 10% of people out there, including myself, that have never seen an episode of Game of Thrones. You can just fast forward through all that part. I apologize. So, you know how every day is like a national holiday of some sort? Well, today is National Book Lovers Day. So, you know, got to thinking, you don't necessarily have to be like our favorite FSU fan and be reading, you know, at the stadium when there's a football game going on. But what was harder for you guys? The required reading for college studies or the playbook? We'll start Golic. Let's just start Golic first.
Because I know where Greg's going. Studies. Greg, did you have to read at Alabama? I wasn't even sure about that.
You skim right through it. Yeah, that's it is.
The problem, though, is you had to read for all these different classes. How am I supposed to read for philosophy, human nature, and human genetics in the same night? No way.
Yeah, I had to read the alphabet, which was challenging, but difficult nonetheless. But I always thought required reading was a grind, because I'm going to fall asleep if I read. The playbook, that kept me uplifted a little bit. It was a little easier to get through that and to digest that information.
This is baloney. This is coming from Greg, a guy who graduated in 3 years, got his master's with a 4.0. So we don't feel sorry for you, Greg. Right, Grolick?
I don't think so.
We will see you guys next Wednesday. That is our next College Football Live at 4:30. Mike Golic Jr., Greg McElroy, Chris Budden. Have a fantastic weekend. See you guys.